The Bloody Podcassacre with Zach Walters and Kennedy Catherine.
Welcome back to the Bloody Podcast. I'm Kennedy Catherine.
And I'm Zach Walters. It feels like a while.
We say that every time.
I know. I saw you 2 weeks ago for this movie.
We went and saw this movie together.
Yeah, that was 2 weeks ago.
A time was had. It was great.
It was a nice Sunday outing.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of Sunday, it's Sunday.
It is.
Do you want to hear what happened to me?
Always.
Most Sundays, I go grocery shopping in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And then I meal prep for the week.
What was the goal of what you're making?
What was I making?
Mm-hmm.
I was making like a smashed black bean and rice and vegetable dish.
Okay.
So I chop everything up. I like get it all done into the pan. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to let it simmer for a while in some veggie broth. I pour the broth in. The smell hits me. Everything is covered in this broth.
Oh, no.
My dumb brain goes, that's weird. Covers it. Doing dishes, I'm cleaning up, and I'm like, this smell, there is a smell happening. And I take the lid off the pot, and it is unlike any mold smell I have ever smelled
in my life.
And I take the top off of the broth, and I look, and the entirety of the broth is mold. I had to throw away the entire dish of food.
Oh, God.
And like, I have all of it, like, you know, like, yeah. I didn't use everything, so I have everything I need to make it again, but like, the food waste.
I know. And it's also like, you can't tell.
No, I couldn't see.
Also, you don't smell broth.
It wasn't until like it was already out that I was like, wait a second.
I'm sorry that happened.
Thank you. That's all I was looking for.
You're like, I just needed some sort of...
Do you want to hear the other stupid thing that happened to me the other day?
Yes.
Who's to say if I'm going to leave this in the pot or not?
Okay.
So, I wake up. It's like 4:30 in the morning.
God.
And all I can smell is like the most intense menthol. Like, what the fuck is that? Kind of move, and then there's just like a stabbing sharp pain in my shoulder. I'm so confused, and I reach and I pull a tube of Blistex, one of those white, harsh edged tubes of Blistex. The lid is off.
No.
There is the entirety of a tube of Blistex is on my shoulder. But more than that.
Also, is it like burning a little?
Though? A little bit, okay. But it was just kind of like a tiger bomb. It wasn't entirely unpleasant. So I'm like, oh, fuck. I must have like reached over, grabbed it from my nightstand in the middle of the night and put some on and just never like fully put it back. The worst part was that I get up and I start fucking around and I realize that my hair is soaked from like the ear down. All I can smell, it's all I can feel. I'm just like, oh, fuck this. Get it all wet. I'm like, okay, this is probably cool. And then I start blow drying it. I could have blow dried it for the rest of my life. It was never going to be dry.
Oh, God.
I had to wash my hair 3 times before it was finally out.
I don't. That's like, you know when you put coconut oil in your hair? But when you leave it for too long or you like don't wash it out fully, that's what I picture it being like.
Pretty much entirely like thicker. And it, no matter how much I combed, it was like my hair felt wet. Oh, it was awful.
Ew.
So anyway, I needed some sympathy, but obviously everyone's like, that's hysterical. Why? How the fuck did that happen?
You know what? That's fine, though.
Thank you. Thanks.
It happens.
Thank you.
Did you like strip your bed and wash it immediately?
Weirdly.
No, I flipped the pillows over and went back.
But seriously, get this. And I cannot make sense of it. I cannot find a spot on my bed.
Well, because your hair absorbed it all.
Seriously, I think it must have like actually like been in my hair.
I was gonna say maybe you had it and then like it went by your shoulder and like slipped under your neck into your hair.
Something
and then
like
you were
that.
Like it just
because I can't find it. Like you'd think even like a spot. Mm-hmm. I have white sheets. Can't find it.
Weird.
It is weird. So that's this week's edition of very silly things that happened with me.
This week I don't think I've had any silly things happen to me.
No.
No, it's been a kind of bland week.
Ugh.
It's just been like work and home.
No,
you know?
Tomfoolery.
No.
No excitement.
Oh, okay. No, it's not exciting, but like it was to me.
Okay.
And I did not pursue it more than I originally wanted it.
Okay.
So it was over at your place and you were gone.
Right.
We were just discussing this. And we went out to, like, a friend's show.
Mm-hmm.
Back to your place.
Yeah.
It was just three of us, and we just chilled and whatever.
Mm-hmm. Obviously, Zach is friends with my roommate.
Yes.
They were not just using my home while I was gone.
So we were there. And your roommate was like, oh, did you hear we got a bidet?
Oh, my God. Oh, my, tell me everything.
So I had never used one before. And I want us so badly now to be sponsored by...
Tushy,
yes.
That's not what we have, I know. But yes.
You have a nice one.
We do.
It was a life-changing experience.
I cannot even tell you.
Although, it was angled a little too low for me being a male with male parts.
I'm sorry about that.
But that's okay. You live and you learn.
Mm-hmm.
Life-changing.
It feels so uncivilized to go to the bathroom now without one.
Using one?
It's
I know.
It's so weird.
I came home and I was like, this is disgusting.
Right? I never even thought about it. Like, I was not the advocate for the bidet in our house. I was not against it. I just wasn't the one who pursued getting one. So when we did get it, I was actually not here. I wasn't in the country. And so I got the notification that, like, it was being installed. And I was like, oh, cool. When I get home, I guess we'll have a bidet. And at first, it was a little off-putting because it's quite large. Like, it's an attachment on your toilet that you can't hide it.
No.
So I walked in and I was like, okay, that's what our toilet looks like now. That's fine. Could not stop uncomfortably laughing. Like the first three times I used it.
It is kind of jarring.
It is.
At first. Because you're like, wowza, this is a new experience.
Yes.
But let me tell you, I went to the washroom later again that night. Didn't have to use the bidet, but I wanted to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I sat my ass down and used a bidet. And it is so good. And I would love to have a bidet sponsor us.
It's like an air fryer. It's like white people with air fryers. Yes. I can't stop talking about it. I'm so glad you got to have that experience. I know that two of our friends immediately disliked it. And then on second use were like, I realized I was being foolish.
Yeah. Here's the thing. When I went in, I was like, I'm going to use the bidet. Mm-hmm. I said it. I was like, I want to try it. I'm going to use it. So if you go in before, you won't have that awkward like, hey, how y'all doing? You know, where they all just know that you just got your... insides blasted a little. So that was my exciting news.
I can tell that people feel a little weird about it. And I'm like, we are sort of like people who homebrew our own drinks in the sense that if you come into our house, like we will try to push it on you.
Yeah.
We're not weird about it. We're encouraging. We're like, do you have to use the bathroom? No, that's fine. You don't need to use it to experience the bidet.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like I'm pretty sure we walked in and it was like, hi, let's see the new additions. Here's the bidet. We're like, wow, it's like a child.
It is.
So
we're very proud. I mean, what's scarier than...
dirty ass.
And on that note, should we go into some horror news?
Yes, I only have a couple of things.
Tell me.
So they're making another Evil Dead movie, which is called Evil Dead Rise, which is coming out on HBO Max.
Cool.
But it's gotten an R rating due to strong bloody horror violence, gore, and some language.
As is the way with Evil Dead.
Yes, because I love the remake, and I know a lot of people... didn't who were fans of the originals. So I'm kind of excited for this one. This one follows a woman named Beth who's overdue to visit her older sister Ellie, who lives in Los Angeles with their three children. And during that visit, they discover a mysterious book deep in the bowels of Ellie's building. Bowels, bidet.
It all comes full circle.
This fateful discovery gives rise to a flesh-possessing demon and thrusts Beth into a primal battle for survival. Also, which I'm kind of intrigued about, HBO Max is also doing a new TV series, and it's called Welcome to Derry, and it serves as a prequel to the It movies. And I think that that will be very good to have something kind of fleshed out in that universe that doesn't revolve around those children again.
Yeah.
I
also loved the It movies. Really big fan.
Like the new ones?
Yes.
I've
never done them.
No. No, I love the original TV series movie.
Me too. Love
it. Absolutely love it. There was a summer where I just watched it every couple of weeks.
But who can beat him?
I know. No one.
Tim Curry is just truly so talented.
I liked the first, It Part 1.
Mm-hmm.
It Part 2 kind of fell flat for me.
It's the same thing that I have with many of the movies we talk about on this podcast where the nostalgia, kids on a bike, on an adventure, that sort of Goonies feel. I just love it.
Yeah, the only issue that the casting was amazing.
So movie. Good.
The thing that I found was the trailers I found were scarier than the actual movies.
Mm-hmm. They packed everything into the trailers kind of.
And so I was kind of disappointed, but I remember being so excited to watch the remake.
I still think about that scene where Jessica Chastain is in that woman's apartment.
Oh, and the old woman.
And she kind of scurries past the doorway naked.
Terrifying.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I'm kind of excited. It's supposed to be set in the 60s. Mm. Those are kind of like the only two exciting things mm-hmm. that have piqued my interest in doing a little bit of research. That Morbius movie came out. Have you seen?
I've seen some tweets and it's not. It's
being brutally torn apart.
Yeah.
Which I mean, I kind of suspected because mm-hmm. it's Jared Leto doing a superhero movie again. So yeah. What do you get? But yeah, that's kind of it.
We did talk about a streaming service that we found that is not available in Canada right now, but is it available in the US? And mm-hmm. our analytics tell us that most of our listenership is in the States.
Called Screambox.
It sounds really great.
Like the genre format they have looked really like intriguing. I couldn't see what the price point was.
But it's a streaming service that was built by horror fans, and it's like a Shudder, but it looks like the selection is quite a bit better mm-hmm. and more modern. Like I find the one thing that is not very enjoyable about Shudder is that they don't have very many mainstream
yes.
options.
And the problem, I think, is because of distribution rights.
For sure.
But also, if you're making a horror movie, you should be looking into things like this.
Yes, that's what I don't understand. Like, if Shudder is the horror streaming service, like, mm-hmm. why would you not want to be on there?
I know.
So, yeah, if you're in the States, check out Screambox. And then if you do, let us know what it's like. Because
mm-hmm. I'd like to, like, there's, like, new, like, do they do originals? Mm. That would be interesting. I didn't look that far into it. Malignant was on there. Mm-hmm. They had some cool, like, found footage looking movies that are right up my alley. Did some comedy horror. They had kind of everything. Let us know if you use it. Should we talk about the movie?
Mm-hmm. This week, we are doing Ty West's X.
That is a mouthful.
It is.
It's a lot of consonants.
Mm-hmm.
Ty West's X. It's an A24 film.
Do we want to talk about our theater-going experience? What did you expect? Did it measure up to your expectations?
Well, when I went in, 30 minutes before we arrived at the theater, when you arrived also 45 minutes early, you guys were there so early.
Yeah, we sat in the parking lot for a while.
I decided, I was like, I just want to go like read some reviews. Mm. And everybody who I follow on Letterboxd, people online were like, this is the best new horror movie in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
It was rave reviews. It was like, people like, it is so disgusting. It is so gory. And then we watched it and we were like having fun.
Yeah, it's very entertaining.
But like towards the end of it, I was like, I'm kind of let down a little.
I felt similarly. Not even necessarily let down. I really enjoyed it. I thought mm-hmm. it was very entertaining. I just didn't know what it was going to be. And of course, I filled in the blanks and it was not exactly what I expected.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I didn't realize it was a Ty West film. And if I had, I think I would have had a greater understanding of what it might be like. Because Ty West did like House of the Devil, a couple different things. It kind of fell in line with like the House of the Devil sort of energy where it is very much an homage to early horror films. So I didn't realize that it was going to be like that. Mm-hmm. I kind of was thinking of it as the experience I've had with other A24 horror films. And I thought it was going to be a little bit more thought-provoking in a complex way. Not that this movie isn't thought-provoking when you look at the themes, but yeah. on the surface, you could just watch this and not really think much about it ever again.
That's kind of how I've been these past 2 weeks, is like I haven't had a lot of like thinking about it.
Me neither.
I was telling like my coworkers, I was like, oh, I went and watched this movie. This was the plot. It's very much like a Sunday matinee movie to me.
Perfect.
Like if you're one of those people like me, I love to watch a horror movie on Sunday mornings. Put it on and you kind of like can not pay attention, but also like it can like entertain you. Mm-hmm. It's just not going to be like groundbreaking.
Right.
It's because I thought it was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
Visually stunning movie.
Characters are extremely well fleshed out.
Yes. I found that the dialogue at times could be a little bland.
I found almost the opposite in the beginning, that I found the dialogue to be a little campy. Maybe not so much the written dialogue as much as it was like the characters mm-hmm. were very stereotypical Southern.
Mm-hmm.
Like Brittany Snow and Mia Goth both had very like
your Southern twangy girl accents where it's like,
and very upper register for mm-hmm. Brittany. Yeah, there was something about it where I was like, this is very showy, very campy in a certain yeah. way. But I adjusted to it at some point and stopped noticing.
One thing is like you can tell that like Ty West took a lot of like inspiration from like Tobe Hooper going into this movie, yeah. like with Texas Chainsaw, and like specific shots and like coloring and like even just like other famous horror movies.
Psycho, I think there's some yes. nods to.
It's not as slashery as it also makes it out to be,
mm-hmm.
this movie. I think that it probably was, what, the last 20, 30 minutes where it was kind of, I feel
maybe
like.
Maybe 30 to 40 minutes.
I don't really, I don't have a concept of like how long that movie was.
It was short. It's like exactly an hour and a half, which we love.
Yes.
So it was probably the last 40 minutes was when it really like ship kind of kicked off.
Yeah. And I thought it was going to be a lot more going into it.
The one thing I appreciate about it is that it is at its core a slasher film, and it is a very high quality slasher film, which we don't often get.
Yes. Everything was very realistic. We had Mia Goth, who played two characters. A lot of people online were like, wow, I never would have guessed.
We both guessed pretty immediately, but I...
We both, like, didn't confirm, though, until the end. Right. We were both like, we're going to keep quiet just to make sure that we don't look stupid.
So I've seen so many different takes on that. Some people saying they never would have guessed. Some people who said they picked up on it immediately. Some people who said, which was my original feeling, was, I know this person is being played by someone who is younger in prosthetics, but I don't know it's her exactly until we got to the first scene of Maxine and Pearl interacting. My thought was not like she's playing her just to play her like a Tilda Swinton did in Suspiria, but rather I kind of suspected that there was going to be some like alternate universe type of thing happening.
Yeah, well, because they were showing photos of her younger.
Right.
In my original thought was that she's killing people to become younger.
Yeah, I
did. Is like what I thought was is going to happen. But it's pretty cut and dry on just like they're killing people because like she has no intimacy
in her life.
And so she is mad at the people who do have that.
Yeah.
So that's kind of like the reason.
A very sympathetic and very thought-provoking premise, which I really, as a woman specifically, appreciate that sort of... that sort of look at things. I feel like I should probably read the synopsis before I get too far into it. But I listened to a ton of reviews about this movie and just people talking about it. And something that bothered me in a couple of the reviews that I watched is people did not like that we had ultimately a sex scene between two elderly people. I don't want to see that shit. And I'm like, that's literally the point of the movie. The point of the movie is that this woman feels cast aside because she's lost her youth. She doesn't feel like she's sexually or romantically relevant to the world anymore. And like, no one is looking at her.
Not even her husband.
Right. I've never had a problem with like nudity, looking at old people, sexualizing people of a certain age, because I feel like that's a very like sort of puritanical Western point of view. And it just doesn't really bother me that much. And something about listening to bros just kind of be like, I don't want to see that shit. I know that that was even kind of the point, but it still irked me.
Yeah. It added to the whole story of it.
Yeah. To put it as minimally as possible, old people are allowed to fuck.
One of my favorite things I saw on Reddit was just like, this movie is literally about an incel granny.
So fucking true.
And I was like, you know what? It kind of is.
My favorite was when, like, a game of telephone down the aisle in the theater where she turned to me and she goes, is this an episode of This Is Us?
And then you laughed so hard, told me I was, like, cackling.
Yeah.
And I told our other friend and we were just all losing it for, like, 2 minutes.
It was really funny.
Yeah. We had a lot of fun.
It was really fun. It's a very fun watch. Okay. Do we want to get into it?
Yes. I would like to hear, like, a plot refresh. Right. Even though, like, it's not that I saw this months ago, but I'd like to hear it in words.
All right, hey. Before we kind of get into it, because this is like a movie with some big names, I'm just going to tell everybody who everyone is. So Maxine is played by Mia Goth. Mia Goth also plays Pearl. Wayne is played by Martin Henderson, who gives a very, very young Kurt Russell vibe.
Yes.
Bobby Lynn was played wonderfully by Brittany Snow. Lorraine was played by Jenna Ortega, and then RJ was played by Owen Campbell. And all of these people are probably very recognizable, even if you don't know their names. And then Jackson Hole was played by Kid Cudi.
But so not, fucking good. But doesn't use Kid Cudi.
So in 1979, aspiring actress Maxine, played by Mia Goth, embarks on a road trip with her producer boyfriend Wayne, fellow actors Bobby Lynn and Jackson Hole, director RJ, and RJ's girlfriend Lorraine to shoot an adult movie. Lorraine is unimpressed with the film and RJ's attempts to make it seem like a serious piece of cinema. The group arrives at the farm of Howard and Pearl, an elderly couple whose guest house the group intends to shoot the film in. As filming commences without the couple's knowledge, Maxine is invited inside the couple's home by Pearl, who expresses jealousy for Maxine's youth. She reaches for Maxine, but then they hear Howard coming home and she rushes out. Pearl pleads with Howard to have sex with her, but he refuses, claiming his heart is too weak. Night falls and the film crew relax after shooting. Lorraine, wanting to shed her reputation as a prude, asks to be in the movie. Eventually, RJ agrees to shoot a scene between Lorraine and Jackson, but becomes so upset that he attempts to drive away while the others sleep. However, he's stopped by Pearl, who attempts to seduce him. When he refuses her, she stabs him to death.
Great fucking scene.
That was so good. We got out of the theater, I remember, and we were all like, can we talk about that car scene? Like, this car stabbing scene?
The energy, the cinematography.
The music, the lighting, like, everything in that scene, we were just like...
I've wanted to watch it again, but I can't find many clips of it anywhere.
I know. I think I saw it comes out on Blu-ray in May.
Okay.
So next month.
Nice. So Lorraine and Wayne notice that RJ is missing and go looking for him. Wayne is killed with a pitchfork in the barn. Lorraine is invited into the couple's house by Howard, who asks her to retrieve a flashlight from the basement. When she does, she discovers the rotting corpse of a missing man and attempts to flee, but finds that she's been locked in. Howard approaches the guest house and asks Jackson to help him locate Pearl. Jackson finds a submerged car in a pond before Howard shoots him dead, revealing himself to be complicit. Meanwhile, Pearl enters the guest house and climbs into Maxine's bed, naked. Maxine awakens and screams. In the farmhouse, Lorraine uses a hatchet to break through a panel in the basement door, but Howard bludgeons her, breaking her fingers, and forces her back inside.
Oh my god, I forgot about that part.
That was rough.
Bobby Lynn follows Pearl outside to the nearby lake and tries to guide her away from the water, but she angrily accuses Bobby Lynn of being a whore before pushing her into the lake, where she's devoured by an alligator. Maxine sees Pearl and Howard return to the guest house and hides under the bed where the couple begin to have sex. Maxine manages to crawl out of the room and flees to the crew's van, where she finds RJ's corpse and the keys missing. Armed with a pistol from the van's glove box, Maxine enters the farmhouse and frees Lorraine, who panics and runs out the front door, only to be fatally shot by Howard. As Howard and Pearl begin moving the bodies, intent on framing the crew as intruders on their property, Howard has a heart attack and dies. Maxine attempts to shoot Pearl, only to discover that her pistol is unloaded. In an attempt to shoot Maxine, the force from the shotgun blasts Pearl out of the house and breaks her hip. As she lay outside, injured, she begs Maxine for help. Instead, Maxine backs over her with a truck, crushing her head before driving away. The next morning, the police arrive at the house, and it's revealed that Maxine is the daughter of a conservative Christian preacher whose speeches were frequently heard on Pearl and Howard's television. Before we move on to my first question, I just want to say that I feel like that ending reveal was anticlimactic at best, and I don't know if it was supposed to be interesting.
I know.
But it just didn't really seem like it needed to be there. Yeah. And like, we didn't have a concept of who this preacher was. Like, there was no plot around like
her being a good Christian girl, it just kind of felt thrown in, and I don't know why. My second favorite shot though in the movie is that ending scene where it's the wide shot in the truck of Mia Goth driving away at night. I loved that shot. I do feel like that both Howard and Pearl had kind of anticlimactic deaths.
Howard's was expected.
I know, but it was also just like, well, there he goes. And like, I liked that her head was ran over. That was like fun.
Mm-hmm.
I get it. Like, shooting that gun would make an old frail body like jolt back, but she just flew through the house.
I have shot a few shotguns in my day. Yeah, a kickback here and there is a little painful. I have never seen anything like that happen.
She went far, like it's a good 3 meters. It's not a cannon. No. A lot of the like time with the kills in this movie, I found they tried to make it like this, like, you know, campy 80s style, but they were all very like quick and cut and dry.
Outside of RJ, who is the first kill, Pearl stabs him in front of the truck and the headlights are on, and she spends quite a bit of time on him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, outside of that, that's kind of it. They were really quick.
Like the one where he gets the pitchfork to the eyes.
Yes.
It was so quick, and like you saw it coming. Mm-hmm. A stab and done, and we moved on. And I was just like, oh, it's not like it has to be like run, stab, run. Like,
that would have been tiring.
Yeah. And like, that's like what we're used to. But I did find it, the rest of them, a little underwhelming, especially like the alligator. Like, we knew that was coming.
Well, speaking of knowing that it's coming, there's a lot of foreshadowing about the deaths. Do we want to talk about that real quick?
Yes. But one thing I do want to mention, and it still relates to the plot, we didn't stay till the end, and there was after-credit scene. And
there was non-after-credit scenes. There was an after-credit trailer.
Yes.
For Pearl, the prequel that they've already shot.
So we missed that.
I've seen it.
Oh.
It's online. It's hard to find, but you can find it.
Oh, well, maybe I'll go look at it after.
It's not that interesting. It's a very minimal trailer. It's like maybe like 30, 40 seconds.
Oh, okay. It's like a little teaser.
It's just, yeah, it's just a teaser.
But yeah, I didn't know that that was a thing.
They're not showing it everywhere. They're showing it in the States. They might be showing it here, but I read a review that in the UK and Australia, they're not showing it at all, which is weird. Okay, so we knew the deaths were coming.
Yeah.
Wayne, at the very beginning of the movie, says people's eyes will pop out of their heads when they see this, when he's talking about the movie they're going to make.
Mm-hmm. And get stabbed in the eyes, yes. Mm-hmm.
The first shot of Bobby Lynn is when she's walking out of the titty bar. Like, I don't really know what it was. It was like
I forgot about that. Yeah.
It was kind of like a strip joint, I think they worked at. And when she's walking out of the building, there's a mural on the building and it is a blonde woman having her clothes ripped off by an alligator.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And you know I love these little tidbits.
Jackson mentions at some point that how many farmers have I had who pointed a gun at me?
How did he die?
By Howard, okay. Yeah. Obviously, Howard mentioned his heart many times. Howard at some point says something along the lines of, like, wanting Maxine to be careful because she'll break her hip.
Oh.
Yeah.
Interesting.
There's also that beginning scene with, like, the van goes over the cow.
Yep, forgot about that.
God, that was a rough scene. So that's kind of along the lines of, like, Maxine driving over Pearl's head. So, yeah, there was some really good foreshadowing.
Now, I want to watch it again just for those.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like it's going to be one of those movies that I would kind of, like, skip through.
Mm-hmm. Who is your favorite character?
Ooh.
There's some really good characters in this movie.
I really liked Brittany Snow's character. Mm-hmm. I liked Mia Goth, but I didn't like her as Pearl. I don't know. Yeah, I think Brittany Snow was my favorite, and then RJ would be my second favorite.
I hated him.
The cameraman.
That's what I mean. No, hated him.
Oh, no. Sorry. Yeah, you're right. I don't like him.
The guy who didn't want his girlfriend to be in the movie.
Yes. I forgot that he did that.
I really liked Wayne because I feel like on paper, Wayne is a horrible person.
Yes.
He's a guy who wants to make exploitation films.
Mm-hmm.
He wants to put his young hot girlfriend in his movies. So like on paper, you write it out and it sounds bad. But he comes across with like this very lovable energy.
I know. He's like very caring.
Yes.
In a weird sense. And like, yeah, I don't know. He was a great character.
The thing I found interesting about this movie is, like, I think Ty West has talked about how he wanted to incorporate pornography into the movie because there's, like, this very sort of symbiotic, like, cohesive relationship between horror movies and pornography, where very low budget home films, amateur films to make, and, like, not super well respected.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, this movie does not portray pornography in a way that movies often do, where the women are like disadvantaged and disempowered. Like, they are all making this choice to be there. They want to do this thing. And none of the women are pitted against each other. The women all really like each other. And so when Lorraine makes this quote unquote empowered choice to be in the film, the only person who has a problem with it is her boyfriend. And the irony is that he spends the entire first half of the film defending why this is great cinema and like how amazing it's going to be and how he's going to make it so great. But then when it's his girlfriend who's in the position of saying, I want to do that, then it's a problem, which really just like shines a light on how most people feel about sex work, which is interesting.
Yeah. Why did I say I liked RJ? Maybe it's because I liked his death the most.
He had a great death. Great death.
Yeah, I don't know. But yeah, I think Brittany Snow's character was my favorite.
She was really great.
I mean, it's like, it was a very classic character to play. And it's not something that we haven't seen Brittany Snow, like, kind of do, other than, like, it being more, like, sultry.
Mm-hmm.
But I love Brittany Snow. More in relation with Pearl is, so I'm just reading from this YouTuber called Burns Reviews.
Okay.
And it says, Pearl is set in World War I in 1918 and explores the origins of Pearl. And it takes place prior to the previous film and explore how the cabin where the Massacre of X takes place was once used as a boarding house during the war.
Ooh, that'll be interesting.
It was in March of 2022. It was revealed that the prequel film was shot back-to-back in secret with the first film. Principal photography took place in New Zealand, and upon official announcement was already in post-production stage. Mia Goth will obviously reprise her role. A24 produced the project. Ty West, Mia Goth, Kid Cudi and Sam Levinson are executive producers, and it was only shown in North America is what it says. One thing I forgot when we were watching in the credits was that Sam Levinson was a producer on this movie.
And he's the producer of Euphoria, right?
Yes, and that kind of threw me through a loop a little. Hmm. Not because I'm, like, expecting him only to be able to produce one thing, but I also kind of was.
Right.
And I was like, I don't know what else he's done other than Euphoria. So I was like, Sam Levinson?
Producers are kind of a weird role.
I know. They can just, like,
kind of put their hands in whatever they want to.
Yeah, and just be, like, or just be, like, a money source, essentially. Yes, so, exactly.
Oh, this brought on like three different thoughts. I find it interesting that this movie was shot in New Zealand, but it's set in Texas. And then we just did Texas Chainsaw Massacre 22 and it was filmed in Bulgaria.
Weird.
Yeah.
This movie is what I feel like the new Texas Chainsaw should have looked like. I
fully agree.
Like it has that like tone to it, even though I find it's like not as like dusty as what like a normal Texas Chainsaw is and what it looks like. This is what I wish it would have been.
I agree.
And it wasn't, unfortunately. You said it brought like three things to you.
Well, this is kind of unrelated, but in relation to Ty West, I learned something today that I thought was really interesting. Ty West directed Cabin Fever 2.
Okay.
Have you ever heard of the Alan Smithy move? I
don't think so.
Alan Smithy is a credit that they will put on films when directors want to disown a movie. Ty West did not, by the end of Cabin Fever 2, want to be linked to it anymore, but requested to Alan Smithy, that motherfucker, and they didn't let him. It's like for very specific instances, if you feel like you lost creative control or like something happened where you were unable to like effectively make the movie that you wanted to make.
So like, where does it show up?
On a movie where it would say the director, it'll say Alan Smithy. It's a pseudonym that they use in place of their actual director's name.
I'm now going to IMDb and looking up Alan Smithy.
Do it.
So this says is a common pseudonym for directors whose film was clearly taken away from them and recut heavily against their wishes.
Right.
Hellraiser 4 is one of those movies. The Twilight Zone, the movie. A lot of them are like kind of like no name kind of things. Like there's one that's Star Wars Episode 3 Revenge of the Sith recreated in less than an hour. Like what is that? Interesting.
It's a hot fact.
Yeah,
it's interesting.
A lot of them are like shorts or TV movies. I kind of want to be on this list.
No, you don't, because that means that your project didn't get made the way you wanted it to.
I know, but it's such a like, there's 33 actor credits. Wow. Wow, wow, wow.
Wow, what were you at?
Wow, this is... There's one called the Tony Blair Witch Project. So what was the movie again? Cabin Fever 2.
Yeah.
Interesting. Now I kind of want to go watch it.
I watched The House of the Devil today just to remember. And it's a very aesthetic movie.
What is Cabin Fever about?
I don't know.
One question.
Yeah.
What do you think of Mia Goth as an actor in general?
I genuinely haven't seen her in all of that much.
I've only seen her in two movies. And Suspiria.
The first couple of times that I saw her, you know when you're watching something and you think to yourself, like, this is a model.
Yes.
And if you've ever worked in casting at all, models go up for gigs when they're looking for someone who is this very specific look where you don't necessarily need someone with great acting chops.
Yeah.
That is kind of how I felt about her the first time that I saw her in things. And it's not about her being, like, exceptionally beautiful. It's just, like, she has a very particular look. She never gave me, like, a specific vibe. She's not super stunningly talented in, like, a I've seen her do incredible things type of way. But everything I've seen her in, I've liked her in. And I thought her performance in this was really good.
Yeah, I really liked her in this movie.
Yeah.
Suspiria, she wasn't, like, a main character per se, but she was also good in that. And then she was also in A Cure for Wellness.
I believe she was in Nymphomaniac as well.
She was in High Life. She was in Nymphomaniac Volume 2.
Yes. Yeah, I just kind of have found her to be like a little like one note. Like she just kind of plays like a very similar character all the time.
But what a name.
Yeah, Mia Goth. Is she married to she's married to Shia LaBeouf?
Oh yeah, they filed for divorce. It just says Shia LaBeouf, October 10th, 2016 to present, and then it says in brackets, filed for divorced.
Oh, interesting.
Divorced.
Filed for that old divorced.
They met while filming Nymphomaniac. Would like to see her in something else.
Me too. How did you feel about our sort of villains of this movie, Howard and Pearl?
overall of like them as characters.
Yeah, or... them as characters, their motivation.
I liked Pearl more than I liked Howard. Mm-hmm. Howard seemed a little like trying to keep her under control.
I mean, I think he was.
Yes.
Do you think that he was trying to make it so that this didn't happen? Because in the beginning of the movie, he basically tells them, like, keep to yourself, keep this under wraps, because I don't want my wife to know you're here. Did he think it was just going to be Wayne, and then Wayne would be, like, sacrificed to her for the greater good? Is he facilitating this, or is he trying not to let it happen?
I feel like he was trying not to let it happen because they had that man in the basement already.
But he was dead.
He was alive.
No.
He moved his head.
No.
I swear to God.
In the synopsis, it even says a rotting corpse. Because I thought it was RJ when they first showed him. I'm like, yes. Oh, that guy's dead. That's RJ. It's a dude in glasses. And my facial blindness for men came through hard.
Apparently, you see a photo of him earlier in the movie, though.
Right.
On a milk carton. You know, it's not something that you can just search up. Was the guy in the basement dead in X? X-Files. I thought he was alive.
I don't think he was, dude. I'm sorry.
Two men found fatally shot in a Brooklyn basement. That's the next one. On Malcolm X Boulevard. You know,
sometimes... I mean, agree to disagree. Either way, it doesn't really necessarily change the outcome of the question. Because, I mean, like, Howard... I don't think Howard didn't want to sleep with his wife. I think he really couldn't.
Or he'd die.
Or he'd die, which he did.
But not from that result.
No.
Also, okay, we never really talked about it, but the scene where she gets into bed with Mia Goth was so unsettling because we were just like, enough, please.
I actually, this movie did not sit with me, like, in terms of I was not thinking about it. It didn't, was not thought-provoking. A long-lasting,
yeah.
But that night, I had to get up and use the bathroom, and I really had some feelings when I was sitting in the bathroom looking out into the dark hallway. I'm like, that naked ass bitch is going to scurry on past and she's going to be in my bed.
Yep.
And she's going to touch my shoulder.
And yeah, she was like, had her little like hand in blood. And then when you really think about it, it's Mia Goth touching her own shoulder.
One thing that I didn't think was clear, and maybe this was like very obvious to other people and I'm just overthinking it, was I wasn't sure if her motivation with women was inherently sexual.
I don't think it was. I think it was more of a youth type of thing, which is why I thought, in my mind, it was going to be that she was going to kill these people and become youthful again. I thought that was the, like, kind of goal towards these women. But also kind of just, like, more jealousy that they had what she wanted.
With Mia specifically, or with Maxine, I guess, a couple of the reviews and even a couple of the synopsises that I read very much were written in the way that she was pursuing her.
Yeah,
or, like, putting a move on her. And, like, no. I didn't feel that way.
If she was, it would have been a different touch.
I think she touches her a little bit, but, like, either way...
It is not in a sexual manner.
No, I mean, she wasn't, like, groping her.
No.
I think she was just observing, and I think there was something about Maxine that she liked. I mean, she said that, but I just don't really know also, what her motivation was.
Maybe she was like, this woman's too eerily similar to what I looked like in 1918. Do you ever think she's like,
Well, I didn't realize...
Something's not adding up here.
Which, like, obviously, but,
is
like,
this my granddaughter?
Didn't realize that Mia Goth was the one who was in the photos in the house.
I didn't either, because I think they make it look a little bit different.
Right.
Because then it would have been weird that we would have been like, why is she in these photos?
Right. That's why my brain was like, I think something's happened. Is this a time travel movie?
It could be cool, though, if it was her grandmother.
Well, speaking of her backstory, this is just like a personal gripe. I did find it a little annoying that they make her the preacher's daughter, because I feel like it gives us that sort of, oh, she's traumatized. And that's why she's rebelling backstory, rather than just like, it's a woman who wants to be in a pornography because you can also just want to do that.
Also, like, she's trying to survive now at this point.
Right.
But also, like, televangelists are the worst.
They really are, but I find them fascinating. Have you watched Eyes of Tammy Faye yet? Yes. Oh, so fucking good.
It was so good.
Do you want to rate it?
Yeah, I feel like I don't really have anything else to say. My notes are just like... The other note I have is the opening shot that was framed with a farm door where it looked like it was a different, like it was like a 4:3.
Yeah.
Then it slowly zoomed out. I was like.
There was very cool transitions, very cool wipes.
Yeah.
Can we talk about Landslide for a second? Because I went to the bathroom and I tried to be really quick and I walked in.
You were very, very quick
though.
Thank you. You literally were like, I'm going to the bathroom, and I blinked and you were like, I am back. And I was like, wow.
Because I really had to pee, but I didn't want to miss anything. And I could tell, I was like, I know shit's about to kick off.
Yeah.
I walked in while the landslide was happening and I was so confused because I could only hear it. And I was like, this is not, Please, you're like, am I going back fucking into musical?
Like, am I going back into the right movie? The soundtrack in this movie is so fucking good.
Oh my god, I didn't even take.
Yes. I just got full body chills because we both just realized that the same thing. Okay.
So, first of all, Zach had to, like, sit through, and I didn't even realize that my roommate and me were, like, grooving in the exact same way.
I could just see out of, like, my peripheral vision in my seat, like, both of them, like, dancing and, like, bopping to the, like, same song. Well, obviously, because we're in the theater, but, like, same moves, same everything, and they weren't even looking at each other.
We just have lived together for so long that we have the same body movements. When RJ is killed in front of the van with the headlights, the song is Fear the Reaper by Blue Oyster Cult. Me and Mara, my roommate, get back in her car, not our car. We don't share a car. We get back in the car. Literally, no one is touching anything. No one has their hands on anything. The Bluetooth kicks in, and what fucking comes on? Fear the Reaper. The silence, I tell you. We were both, like, mid-conversation, and then it was just dead silent for, like, a solid 3 seconds, and then we both looked at each other and, like, clutched each other's arms. It was so crazy. And we looked, and the playlist that she had clicked on doesn't even have that song on it. It was so weird.
And then, yeah, you sent me a video of you.
Yes.
I just saw the text I sent you after also, and we have to talk about it. Okay. I'm just going to read you my text.
Okay.
And then we're going to get into it. Remember the lady in front of us whose straw made a moaning sound?
Only ones who noticed, and we were dying.
I was trying so hard to, like, not, like, burst into laughter. This woman who was sitting in front of us at the theater, like, was just pushing her straw in and out of her cup, but at one moment it was just like, and, like, this noise.
It made, like, the most high-pitched moaning sound. It was so loud, and it was so, like, it was as if someone had downloaded a sexual moan sound effect, and me and Zach, like, immediately, I don't know why we chose each other, but, like, we both just turned to each other like, oh my god.
Because honestly, at first I thought it was from the movie.
Yes.
And then I realized it was the woman in front of us.
Oh, fuck, that was funny.
Oh.
Overall, it was just a very fun experience.
Yeah.
It was not what I thought it was going to be, but I still really enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. Should we rate it?
Yes, I'm ready.
Scary.
4.
Yeah, I'm good with a 4. A 3.5 or a 4.
Mm-hmm.
Unsettling.
Like a 6, maybe, just for, like, certain scenes.
I'm going to go with, like, a 5. It didn't not unsettle me, but it didn't stick with me for very long.
Yeah.
Except for in the night when I was peeing. Story. Great story. I'm going to go with a 7.
I'm going to stick with a 6 on this.
Okay. Was it a paper cut or was it a bloody massacre?
I think it's, like, when you cut the tip of your finger off.
That sounds horrible.
You don't feel it.
Mm-hmm.
But then you realize, you're like, oh, yeah, that's kind of uncomfortable.
I'm going to go with losing a hand to the alligator.
Oh, I thought you were just, like, in general. I was like, okay.
Losing a hand to the alligator in that swamp. You're going to live. It's going to be a little inconvenient.
Yeah.
Or a lot inconvenient. But you're going to live. Side note, RJ's girlfriend, Lorraine, says to him, you know, you like Psycho because they build the suspense. This movie was great at building suspense. Like, when I think about scenes like the one where Mia is floating in the swamp and the alligator. Oh my god. Like, my nerves, my stomach was clenched.
Butthole.
I can't confirm this because I don't remember what it looked like, but I did read a thing that said that the car that Jackson sees submerged in the pond or the swamp or the slough, whatever it is, apparently is very similar to Marianne Crane's car from Psycho.
Oh, interesting. I thought you were going to say it was supposed to be the car that the guy in the basement where they first rolled up.
Well, I think so.
Oh, okay.
But yeah. I think it's supposed to be also, like, a nod to Psycho.
Interesting.
Closing question before we go.
Yes.
What did you, who did you think the final girl was going to be? And did you have any suspicions it wasn't going to be Maxine?
No. I thought it was going to be Mia Goth. My other person that I thought was going to be RJ's girlfriend.
Lorraine.
Jenna Ortega.
Yeah.
Who is in the new Scream movie.
Oh.
She's the main character.
Didn't realize that.
I thought it was going to be one of them or both of them because she was kind of left to her own for a while.
I also thought that. And I also wondered if they were setting up, like, the sort of purity thing to have, like, that sort of final girl virginal thing.
But at the end, she wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
So.
One feeling I did walk away with this movie on a more critical note was just that feeling of there's very little that hasn't been done in almost every dynamic. So in this sort of, like, cat and mouse game, the idea of flipping that on its head and the villains survive, or it's this unexpected character. Like, we've kind of seen everything. Mm-hmm. So I feel like we are primed to not have a huge expectation. And then regardless of what happens, we're sort of like, yeah, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. That is one thing I was a little disappointed by, was like, I didn't think that there was any one outcome that would have been shocking to me, because we've kind of seen everything at this point.
Also, the thing that like kind of like threw me through a loop is like, it just, because it was branded as A24, that you kind of have this mindset going in that it's like, it's going to be something where you have to really think about it.
Mind after. Fuckery.
Yeah. And it wasn't.
I agree. Final note that I had written was, while I did not love it in the way that I have loved other A24 films for the way they scared, unsettled me, and made me think, I loved that this was a love letter to the genre.
Okay. Way to like post a thesis at the end.
Well, whatever. I am a writer after all.
I know. Yeah. Very true, though, with that whole saying.
Let us know what you thought. Give us a comment on the Instagram, on the Twitter. Send us an email at thebloodypodcastacre@gmail.com. Send in a rating or a review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. We really appreciate it. Until next time.
It's dying to show you a good time.